Today is Saturday, June 27th, 2015. My name is Lisa Withers, and I am in the residence of Miss Raynette Green Covington, class of 1971. We are here to conduct an oral history interview for the African American Institutional Memory Project. Thank you, Miss Covington, for participating in this project and for sharing your experiences with me today. I'd like to start the interview by asking about your background. So would you please tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in 1949, and I was born in Goldsboro, North Carolina, which is about 52 miles on the other side of Raleigh. I grew up in Goldsboro, attending the public schools there. I grew up in a pretty much in a single family home with my mom and my grandmother. I have three siblings, all younger brothers. I went to kindergarten and elementary and, you know, at that time junior high and high school, graduating from Dillard High School in 1967. And that was an African-American high school. So it was segregated, although at the end of my high school career, integration had come about, and some of my friends in the community did attend the predominantly white Goldsboro High School at the time.
But you stayed at Dillard.
I stayed at Dillard, and did well there, graduating as second in my class. In looking at schools, I looked at, you know, of course, historically black colleges, which we weren't calling it that at the time, but looked at some of those, Howard, Fisk, I think NCC, North Carolina Central, and then looked at UNCG. And I'm trying to remember what made me first look at UNCG. I think it was I had done some debating competitions in Greensboro, and for some reason I thought Greensboro was a wonderful place to be. And my high school counselor said, you know, why don't you look at this school, and did. Got accepted, got the National Achievement Scholar Scholarship, which allowed me to take that scholarship to any school that I wanted to go to, but also got some financial aid from UNCG, so I was going to be able to go without having to pay any money. So that was really good, because, you know, my mom wasn't really able to send me. My father was very much involved in my life, and he would have helped, but it was great to not have to pay any money. So that's probably the reason that I decided to go there.
Yeah, and you say it was your guidance counselor.
Yeah, my guidance counselor.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was it like growing up in the 1960s?
Well, of course, like I said, predominantly throughout my childhood, everything was, you know, mostly segregated. I can remember the start of talking about discussions about integration and the marches, and even some people that I knew who were older than me that were in high school, kids, teenagers that participated in marches and went to jail and talked about their experiences in there, how, you know, they were treated and things like that. And, you know, it seemed like that's something you should be a part of. But my grandmother was like, no, you're not going out there, because I'm going to get upset and they said, if you can't handle it, don't do it. But, you know, it was very much in the news, and things started, you know, to change. I can remember writing letters to some of my friends that in the summer they would go off to visit relatives in the north, and we would write letters back and forth, and, you know, we talked about what was happening, and I thought, now I think, oh, I wish we could have those letters. They would kind of be historical, you know, just reflecting from a teenage point of view what it was like to see history playing out before your eyes in that way. You know, of course, everybody was always wanting to hear Dr. King on the television or whatever, whenever he would make speeches, and very much keeping up with what he was doing. But, you know, and then the few friends that I did have that went to Goldsboro High School, you know, how they were, you know, they knew they weren't wanted there, but they just put up with it to open up the way, and their parents sacrificed, you know, for them to go there and open up the way. So kind of, I guess, UNCG was kind of a pioneering experience as well. In my class, I went to UNCG. The number one classmate, she went to Duke. And then one of my friends, he went to State.
Okay. NC State in Raleigh.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of were pioneers in that. Mm-hmm. So out of our class, we were the three that went to, we would say, went to white schools. And all of us graduated and did well. So, you know, it was great.
Yeah. So coming from an all black high school, what was the reaction of family and friends at your decision to go to UNCG?
They were proud, but I think nervous. I know my mom and my dad, both my grandma, that they were just proud that I had this opportunity. But they were somewhat nervous as to what was going to happen. One of the things that I remember is the first day of going. Mom got all my stuff and packed it, took me there. And it happened that I think we got there first before my roommate. But I had already decided that I wanted to find out if my roommate was white before I got to school, because I didn't want to have a scene when I got to school. So I decided, the university sent us, each of us, the names of your roommate. They assigned your roommates at that time. So they sent us the new name. I got her name. And her name was, just to show you what the times were like and thinking was like, her name was Barbara June. I said, she's white. If she was black, her name would be Barbara Jean. Her name is Barbara June, she's white. My mom said, you don't know. Yes, I do know this. I said, but I'm going to write her a letter. I'm going to send her a picture so she could see me, and she could decide before we get there if she wants to room with me. And we won't have a scene. So that's what I did. And she sent me a letter back with her picture, and she was white, and all about her, and she said she was excited to room with me and everything. And so that kind of set the tone. And when we got there, her mom was very nice. Her mom was a widow. Her father was deceased. Her mom had brought her down. Mom took us both to Friendly Shopping Center to get matching, you know, bedspreads and all this kind of stuff. And so my first day was a good day. Whereas down the hall from me, one black girl, when she came into her room, her roommate and parents had a fit. and they wanted her moved immediately. It was awful.
So it was a big public scene that happened?
It was a scene in the hall. Anybody who was up there knew that this is what had happened. So it just wasn't pleasant. And I was, again, happy that I had, you know.
You had done some prep work.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But my roommate and I got along fabulously. And in fact, we still kind of keep in touch. She's been to my house. And you know, so over the years, we have kept in touch with one another. Even though we had planned a room together our sophomore year, but she met her husband, fell in love, and moved back home. But again, groundbreaking. She wanted me to come to her wedding, be a hostess at her wedding, and groundbreaking at that time. You know, it just wasn't happening. Even my freshman year, on my hall, everybody was white on my hall, I thought. I have to explain that. But there were two roommates, other black girls that were rooming together on the other hall. And but I was really good friends with everyone that was kind of around me. And one of our friends wanted me to go with the group to her aunt's house in town to have a sleepover. And they were like, you know, Ray, you can go. And I'm thinking in my head, I don't know about this. And I don't know about this. So they got on the phone. I was talking to my mom and grandma. They were like, oh, Miss Green, please let Ray go. And Aunt Libby knows she's coming and she's okay with it and all this. And, you know, it just was a different time. So, but anyway, my mom agreed. And I went and we had fun and everything went well. But it's part of, I guess, you know, the history of getting used to being with each other and learning each other and for me not being afraid of how they're going to treat you. Even though the girls were treating me fine, I don't know what their parents are thinking, you know. So that, and I said about on the hall, there was one girl that was on our hall that was, I found out, really was African American, but she was very fair. And I don't think her roommates and the people around her knew that she was. The way I found out was someone from her hometown who was going to A&T came over to visit me. And he asked me about her. He said, there's another black girl in there. And I said, well, there's this person and this person. I named the two people I knew. No, she's in here. No, she's not. I know who's in here. And I was in South Spencer. And he said, she is. And so he called up for her. And they said, who's calling for her? And he gave his name, and she never came down. And so I was like, okay. But apparently she was passing, or letting everybody assume, I'll put it that way.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, I don't want to read too much into it, but do you know if it was intentional pass or it just overlooked, no one just knew? It's like, well,
okay. I guess they, like I said, or letting everyone assume, because we assumed. I mean, we saw her all the time, but we just assumed. And that she was white, and I would not have known had he not come. And I know where she's from, not too far from my, and a lot of people down there are really, really fair at the time. And so it was easy to happen, because it would be the kind of thing, well, I don't know. And the hair texture and everything was such that you wouldn't, you know, question it. And so he's like, no, she's not white, she's black. I'm like, don't think this way. We from the same place. I know. But that was just funny. It was just funny. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we never said anything to her or tried to, you know, it's like, that's what you want to want to do.
It was just an interesting discovery.
Very
unaccidentally accidental. Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So again, you know, part of the times. But I have to say that for me, my experiences at UNCG were pretty much positive. Had a couple of teachers that you kind of figure they're prejudiced no matter what, you know, they're not going to call on you that much, they're, you know, not going to grade you as high as whatever, you're just here, do the best you can and get out of this class. You know, no grades that were like, you know, like they're trying to fail me or anything like that. But you know, you just kind of had a sense. But then I had some great teachers. You know, one really stands out in my mind, and that was Dr. Luzinski.
Ooh, that's a name. Do you have any remember?
Luczynski.
Whoa.
Luczynski.
Okay, I think I got it.
And he was great. He, I remember the first test, and again, the times, back at that time, you had to take your test in what they call blue books. Has anybody told you that yet?
Oh, they still use blue books. Oh. Well, today, a lot of things, when I was going through undergrad not too many years ago, we have them, but they may have phased out by now.
Right. But blue books. So you had to write in the blue book. And I took the test, the first test, and gave it back, and I had a C. Well, I about had a hissy fit, because a C just wasn't anything I wanted to have. And I was just devastated. So he said, you know, if you got a grade that's not what you're used to getting or whatever, and you have problems, come and see me. So I set an appointment, and he was just so nice, talking about, you know, a lot of people come from smaller schools and not used to this kind of testing or whatever, and, you know, whatever I can do to help you. These are some of the things you need to work on, whatever. And I just was so encouraged by that, and also that he wanted all of us to know his name, know how to spell his name. And he wouldn't let you, he called us, everybody, Miss Green, Mr. So-and-so, all that. And he wouldn't let women wear pants to class. You couldn't wear pants, and you couldn't come to class with rollers in your hair. And that was something during that era that a lot of people did, came to class with rollers in their hair. I never did that, but that's what they did. So he's like, no rollers. So he had certain rules or whatever. But he took the time to know you. If you see him across campus, he goes, Miss Green, even to the day I graduate, how are you doing? You know, and I like that. But he was just a great, great teacher. And I had some other great, great teachers there. My experiences were pretty much positive as far as teachers and students and whatever. Some of my classmates, you know, had some other instances where stuff was said in class that they felt was disrespectful or not aware of the differences in cultures and not sensitive and things like that. Particularly, I have a couple of classmates that were in sociology, and they would go to class and they'd come back fuming. And I would be like, what is y'all's problem? But because it was like the people in the class, even though they were in sociology, weren't sensitive to our culture. They were somewhat condescending, I guess, and like they were going to swoop in and be the savior, and didn't really understand what's going on. So they would come back just all worked up when they would go to class. But, you know, I enjoyed my time in UNCG. But it was, you know, with civil rights, Dr. King was killed while I was in school. We had the riots. When he was killed and we had riots and everything, my roommate at the time, we decided we got to get out of here because we didn't know what was going to happen. And so she found a friend to take us home for that weekend, and I think the university kind of shut down some or whatever because it was just a volatile time. So we left, and the person who was taking us home drove through town, and we saw the National Guard standing out with their rifles. So that was like a war zone. It was unbelievable. So those are some of the things that stands out in my mind. Also stands out in my mind, there was a cafeteria worker strike. And so we stood out on the streets holding up signs and participating in that protest. Yeah.
But I just like listening to talk. I make a list of follow-up questions.
Mm-hmm. The doorbell rang. That's fine. I can pause.
Okay, pause and let me see what's going on.
Okay, and so we are restarting the recorder. Okay, so you talked a lot about several different things.
You did.
So I was wondering if I could just go back, ask some follow-up questions,
sure.
Just get a few more details. So you mentioned you was in South Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
Was that just your freshman year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so
yes.
Where were all the dormitories you stayed in?
I stayed in Ragsdale Mendenhall.
Okay.
And I stayed in the Ragsdale side.
Okay. Was that for the rest of the 3 years?
Yeah, for the rest of 3 years. And like I said, because you stayed in the freshman dorm, mm-hmm. and then you had to pick a dorm for the next year, and pretty much unless you wanted to change, you could be in that dorm until for the rest of the next 3 years. So my freshman roommate, like I said, we had planned to room together, but then she decided to go ahead and get married. So at first, I did not have a roommate, and there was someone else who she didn't have a roommate either, so we roomed together first semester. Even though we got along okay, she liked to watch TV while she was studying, and I could not have the TV on while I was studying. That was not going to work for me. So she decided to move out, and I had that second semester, I had the room all to myself. And then my last 2 years, I roomed with one of my friends who I said that two black girls had roomed together in South Spencer. Well, that roommate had gone, and really she didn't make it that first year. Her academics weren't good enough, grades weren't good enough. And so we roomed together for the last 2 years in that same dorm. And at that time, you could just store your things down in the basement, most of them, you know, in the basement over the summer, box them up and store them, and you didn't have to take everything home and bring it back and whatever. But yeah, I stayed on campus. There wasn't a whole lot of staying off campus going on at that time. I didn't have a car or any of that stuff. Like they do now.
So I know you just mentioned, I've never heard of, you know, during the summer you could store things.
I know
when I was in school you had to move everything out and move everything back in. So what were some other things about dorm life at that time period? What was it like?
Of course we started during that time, freshman year we didn't have this. I'm trying to think, when did it start? The little refrigerators where you could have the refrigerator sometime along that time. You got the refrigerator, you have those, and some people would have hot plates or they would have popcorn poppers that they would use to boil stuff. They would just, you know, heat up stuff. I mean, invent it. But that started coming up. But we didn't have phones in our rooms. So you had a little booth down the hall where there was a phone, and you could go in there and call people, or people could call you at certain times or whatever. And other people, of course, would be waiting out in the hall to use the phone and all that. So that was totally different. You didn't have, you know, restrooms or showers in an area. You just had your room. You had to go down the hall for all of that. I think the laundry was down in the basement, I think. But it was in the dorm, so it was convenient that way. And I always say that one of the things that I remember about that time was from freshman year to senior year, things did a total turnaround, because freshman year you could not go anywhere without your parents' permission. So like I told you, like my freshman year when I wanted to go to this do the sleepover at my friend's aunt's house, I had to get written permission from my mom. Written permission. You had dorm mothers at that time. So if you were gonna, like, we would always talk about going down to the corner. And so going down to the corner, which there was a store and there was some restaurants in it. At that time, there was a place called The Cellar that was an eating establishment. And I think they sold drinks in there too, but it was pretty much a eating establishment. It was down at the corner too. But you walk there, but you still had to get permission. It was okay for you to be able to go down to the corner at certain times or whatever. If you were going to go off campus, you had to get that written permission. So you had to sign out, in and out. Unless you're going to class, you had to sign out if you're going off campus. So, but by the time that I graduated, you could go anywhere you wanted to go. And it was just like, and co-ed dorms came in during the time I was there. Didn't have that at first. You know, because, like, I laugh because, like I said, you had to get written permission to go anywhere. My senior year, my friends and I, we wanted to go to state. We wanted to go down there because we knew some people down there. Somebody said this, they're having a party. We said we want to go down there. And so I told my friends, we go down there on the bus. I'll get my uncle to pick us up and take us to the campus, and we'll figure out a way to get back. Well, we didn't get anybody's permission. My mom didn't know I had done that until I was well grown, married, and I just happened to tell her one day. She was like, "What?"
Wait, so they heavily regulated where the students went.
By freshman year, but by senior year, in that 4-year period, it was totally turned around. Mm-hmm. Totally turned around. And they had started, like, if you wanted to go off and you stayed out, and the dorm was locked, then the police officer had to go by the station and tell them what dorm you were in and show your ID, and then they let you in. So there was none of that being out, you know, past a certain hour freshman year. But by senior year, like I said, you go wherever you want to and come back, and if the dorm was locked, they let you in. So, and by senior year, well, freshman year, no guys could come up to your room, totally out. He comes to the dorm, they call you on the intercom, you come down. By senior year, they could come up to the room and visit you or whatever. So it was just like total in 4 years, so much
like had night changed. And day.
Yeah, night and day.
Yeah, I wanted to ask. I was talking to someone who mentioned that there was a protest to the administration to end curfews. So I didn't know if you knew about that, was even a part of that.
I wasn't a part of that, but that probably, I just remember the change. I don't remember exactly how it all happened, but it was just like, okay, I remember just like, okay, you know, freshman year, you couldn't go anywhere. Now you can go wherever you want to go. This is different. But, you know, again, the times, everything was changing, you know, outside of university. So it was just following what was going on, you know, more hippie freedom, whatever. All of that was happening. And it was happening quite rapidly.
So you mentioned the corner was a place you frequent. Do you remember where was that located?
Let's see. What is the name of the street? Spring Street?
Spring Garden?
Spring Garden, yeah.
Okay, it was on there, Spring Garden Street.
Mm-hmm.
And would it be like where Spring Garden and Tate Street intersect?
I think so. Down there, yeah. You just walk down and everybody just say, I'm going to the corner. And there will be... And there was a little store there on the actual corner. But then a little to the side of that was a place I called the cellar. And at one point there was a restaurant, a cafe kind of place called Mills Diner. We ate there a lot.
Mills as in M-E-L-S. Okay. So... Oh, man, I have so many follow-ups. I'm just, like, trying to keep it all in. Okay, so you talked about your professor, especially the Dr.
Luzinski.
There you go. See, he'd be getting on me all semester to say his name right. And so you talked about that. Was there the same level of interaction, either your experience or, you know, with other students, with the administration at the time?
I don't remember a whole lot of interaction with administration.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
Okay. And so, I guess, also I'm talking about schoolwork and academics, what was your major?
English.
English. Okay, so why did you choose to major in English?
Well, and that's a whole journey. In high school, thinking about what I was going to major in, I first was thinking about psychology. But then I thought, okay, as I, you know, researched it and kind of thought about it, that was going to require me to really have a master's degree pretty early on, and I didn't know where that money was going to come from. So I said, okay, you're good in English. That would be a thing to do. Love to read all my life and all that. So decided you can be a teacher. And then if you want to go into that later, you can. So that's kind of what happened, because I started out as an English teacher in high school, and then I went and got a master's in guidance and counseling. And so my last half of my career in Charlotte Mech was in counseling and school psychology, because the school system had a program where I was able to then go to that and get a master's in school psychology. And so I wound up in the field anyway.
Just took a different route.
Yeah.
And so just for clarification for the transcript, when you say Charlotte Mech, that's Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools?
Yeah, Charlotte Mecklenburg School System.
Mm-hmm. Charlotte Mecklenburg School System. Okay, and so I feel like I'm going to do a long backtrack here.
That's
a little
right.
bit. So can you tell me about your transition? How did you feel about your transition from high school, from being at Dillard High School, particularly academically, but then also socially, to being at UNCG, being that you came from a segregated high school to being in the UNCG atmosphere?
Of course, it was different in that, you know, like I said, I was second in the class. You know, you're known. You're, you know, people have certain expectation of you. You've done well in school or your life. So now you're with people from all different backgrounds who've been exposed to, you know, different things. For me, I think the fact that I was a reader all my life and may not have experienced some of the things, but I'd read about a lot of stuff. So, and I think, you know, reflecting back on it, I went in it with, went there with an open mind that, you know, I don't I'm going to do the best I can. I didn't have the expectation that I was going to be a straight A student like I was in high school. So, and I don't think my mom had that expectation, which, you know, some people would say, well, maybe that wasn't good. You should have had, you know, it wasn't a limiting expectation. It wasn't saying I can't do it. It was just saying I might not do it. They might not give me what I deserve. You know, you might not have all of the things that would have helped you because you came from a smaller setting, because you came from a segregated stuff, whatever. I had some good things in high school that had, I think, really helped me. One was we had a teacher that came to us from Charlotte, and she put a lot of us in an advanced English class and started teaching us advanced vocabulary and exposing us to different books and things like that. So preparation in that way that was different maybe from some other people. So, you know, but of course, knowing that you may not have been exposed to, you know, everything that some other people were exposed to, but knowing you got the intellect and you are going to work hard and you're going to graduate. I mean, that you're here on scholarship. You cannot lose your scholarship. So you're gonna work. You're going to do what you need to do. So, you know, I think I went into it with an open mind and looking. Again, this is an open door of opportunity that integration has brought about. You know, so it's exciting. You kind of are like a pioneer. And so that's how I went into it. I felt proud to be one of the first, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I was going to shift a little bit more into the social extracurricular. Now, you mentioned the sleepover.
Yeah.
With, you know, and going to NC State in your senior year. I wonder, could you share a little bit more about when you weren't studying or preparing for classes, what you might do on or off campus?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things that I remember is when, and out of doubt, they don't do this anymore, I'm sure. We first got there because at that time, UNCG was predominantly female. So they had what they call mixers, where they would take all of us to Chapel Hill and basically let you out. It sounds ridiculous now, but that's what they did. They take us all on the bus, take you to Chapel Hill, let you out, and they would have, you know, a dance and just so, but you just let out and you just meet people there. And then, so I went on this mixer and met these guys, these black guys who were going to Chapel Hill. They were pioneers, so to speak, of the few black people down there at Chapel Hill. And you get there, they get your number, and they might call you. And so I started dating one of the guys, and whenever he could come up, again, most people didn't have cars. One of my friends, though, she met her, who would become her future husband, at that mixer. And the whole 4 years, they dated, and he came back and forth to Greensboro, and she went back and forth. He did have a car, and went back and forth to Chapel Hill or whatever. But that was one experience that stands out to my mind, because at first I was like, this is what, I mean, you know, you just let out, and you just start wandering around, and somebody comes up and says hi, and my name is such and such, and then you're going to this dance or whatever, and you wound up paired up or grouped up or whatever.
So essentially,
that was crazy now.
So essentially, they'll let you know when the bus was going to Chapel
right.
Hill. You
right.
get on the bus.
Right.
You got there.
Right.
You got off the bus and you did whatever
right.
until it's time to get back on the bus.
Right. And that was called the mixer. It was the freshman mixer. So
right.
it was like a one-time event. But a lot of people, you know, met people during that event. Like I said, they did. Now it seems crazy. But
it's definitely foreign to the millennial.
Yes, I'm sure. That's why I'm telling you. That's great. But, you know, A&T was in town. And so a lot of T guys would come over to UNCG because they knew there was mostly females and there were a few black girls over there. And they would come over and they might have friends that they knew that knew somebody who was going to UNCG. And they'd say, you know, I want you to meet my friend. Now, how I met my husband was kind of like that because his cousin used to come over, which I didn't know this at the time, during my freshman year because I didn't know him. He would come over and get some of my friends and other girls, later friends, and other girls to go party. And what they would do would be get in his car and they go over to T, and a lot of guys had apartments and they would have parties. And you just go from head, this sounds so crazy now, but you would go from house to house. You just go in and dance and whatever, and then you go out and you might go next door and somebody's having a party and you dance and whatever. And then he put them in the car and bring them back to UNCG. So my senior year, now all this time, my freshman, sophomore year, definitely, maybe part of my junior, my husband was in the Air Force, so I didn't know he existed. So on my senior year, he drives his cousin over to UNCG. His cousin had called and said, do y'all want to go to the party? We were like, yeah, sure. And so he said, he brought him and went to, his cousin had a house, and we went there. We were partying and everything. And so he and I were talking, and he wanted my number, and I said, okay. At that time, I'm thinking, look, I'm getting ready to leave here. It's my freshman year, you know.
Your senior year?
My senior year. I'm not going to be around, you know, you can call me, whatever. So he didn't call that week. So I said, okay, he didn't call. Like I said, I'm leaving. And that next weekend, he came again. And so when I got down to the car, I didn't know he was there. When I got down to the car and he was driving, I just spoke, got in the back seat. Later on, he told me that impressed him because I didn't say, you said you were going to call me. Why didn't you call me? Yeah. I said, because I'm thinking it doesn't matter. I'm going to be leaving here. And so I met him in February and married him in August. Yes. And, you know, it was out of character for me. In fact, we didn't really plan to get married in August. We were going to wait a year. And then I got the job in Charlotte, and he decided to move down here as well. So we decided to move the wedding up, moved it to August. He came down a couple of weeks ahead, got a job, got an apartment, got all that, and got married, and everything worked out fine. And you know, we married 22 and a half years and he died. And so, but very happy marriage, even though that very short courtship.
But hey, UNCG. It helps.
yeah. But, you know, I dated guys, different guys that went to T and A&T.
Oh, I know what you mean.
And, you know, a couple of guys that just, you know, were, I remember one guy from, who grew up in Greensboro, was from the city or whatever. I think I met him through some friends or whatever. But, like I said, a lot of it was guys coming over because they knew that there were, you know, a few black girls over there, and the thought was they probably like to go out or whatever, and so it was like that.
Okay. So, you see that there was a lot of interaction with, you know, students at UNCG with A&T, any interaction with the students at Bennett?
I didn't. Even though I had a couple of friends from high school that went there, I remember, and these two girls were, one in particular was very close to, and I went over to Bennett and saw her when we first kind of got there, but they never came over to UNCG, and so we kind of drifted apart, so didn't have interaction with Bennett.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So other than with the parties, anything else on campus or and other extracurricular activities?
I joined the, what did they call it then? Alumni Friends or whatever. It was kind of a pairing with alumni and students. I'm not sure that's the right name for it, but I was paired with a lady. I can't even remember her last name now. We kept in touch for a while. And so that was helpful. And then I joined, of course, you probably know this, the Neo Black Society. When that started, I became a part of that. But mostly it was, with my friends who were in the dorm, and we would, go shopping together or do some things like that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I really enjoyed was the opportunities the university provided for us to go to concerts and, plays and things like that. Saw Dionne Warwick on campus, on campus, Whitney Houston's aunt, saw her on campus, is a concert at that time. Earth, Wind, and Fire came to campus. Just had a lot of people, and that same Dr. Lazinski, he encouraged us to do some things that we might not do later because the price might be up there, like go to the opera. He's like, okay, you just expose yourself to seeing an opera. It's free. You're here at the university. It's free. Ballets, Alvin Ailey, first time I saw Alvin Ailey dance group was through the university. That was just great and just gave me a love for that group. So when they came to Charlotte, I was like, oh, I got to go see it, And so just that kind of exposure was great.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Neo Black Society, which is a organization that we're always looking for more information about. So what do you remember about the organization and your involvement with it, kind of what they did on campus?
Yeah, it was just, I remember it got started during my time, again, civil rights and all that. Wasn't an officer or anything like that, just kind of a member, and basically to keep in touch with what's going on campus and being a voice, I guess, for the Black students on campus, and a place where you could express if there were issues and things such as that. That's mainly what I remember.
Because that talking about the Neo Black Society is a segue to another follow-up questions I had, because I know at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned kind of the atmosphere around Dr. King's assassination. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask if there are any other detail that you remember about when it happened, how students reacted to it, or kind of what other students were saying or feeling about that.
Of course, we Black students were feeling shock, sadness, anger, somewhat fear, what's going to happen, who's going to be the leader of the Black movement, it was just unsettling, And then, like I said, riots and unrest, looting and burning and things such as that.
Are you saying in general across the U.S.?
The U.S.
Okay, this is general.
And then I think some incidences erupted in the city because, like I said, the National Guard were there and we were like, what in the world is this? It's like it was, you were in a war zone. We at UNCG were not aware of that until we started crossing the city on the way trying to get out and went through town and saw them there.
The National Guard.
And I think there was, I don't remember the details, but I think there were some incidents at A&T.
Yes, well, I've heard several people mention that the National Guard is more so for the A&T side of Greensboro, but apparently there's been a few mentioned that there were National Guard stationed on each end of UNCG's campus. Mm-hmm. It was just very sheltered.
Right. Like I said, we knew, you know, we were trying to be aware of the news, and we were like, okay, we need to get away from here for a while. And so that's what we did. But, and I think that was the same time, because we were leaving. I remember meeting with one of my professors because was going to go home, so it was going to miss class or something. And he said, well, one of the things that you might consider doing, you know, to do something would be to give some blood or something like that as, you know, give back or help or whatever. So, but he was okay with,
you know,
leaving for a while.
And so something else that you mentioned earlier in the interview that I've heard that the NeoBlack Society was a part of was the cafeteria strike. I didn't know, were there any details that you remembered about that event?
I just remember standing, and I think there's a picture in the yearbook or something of this, standing out holding signs in protest of the unfair wages. Because, of course, as part of work study, I worked in the cafeteria during my sophomore year. I didn't do any work my freshman year. The sophomore year, I got a job in the cafeteria, and then junior and senior year, I worked as a receptionist, like in the dorms. But remember standing out holding signs in protest of the unfair wages and work conditions and things such as that.
So what was it like to work in the cafeteria? What were some of the responsibilities you had?
Mainly, there was no cooking or anything like that, but mainly serving and, you know, getting the trays, the food out on the line and things like that. And it was, you know, even cafeteria was different then than now, because, I mean, you had a meal, and you didn't have, like, you chose, it was like going to K&W. I mean, you just pick what size and meat or whatever that you want, but you're not choosing to get Chick-fil-A or, you know, anything like that.
I've heard several interesting stories about the dining hall. Is there anything that you remember about eating it?
I love the dining hall.
Could you tell me a bit about the dining hall?
Because for me, I mean, if I remember correctly, you could come in for these different sides or whatever to the dining hall. And it was just a social place as well, you know, because there were certain hours that you could go. And so, you know, breakfast is at a certain time, lunch is at a certain time, dinner is at a certain time. You know, we'd be in the dorm, like, oh, we better get on to the cafeteria, you know. And we'd go on in there. And you had a meal that you knew, you know, when you got there, you knew what they were going to have that day. You had a choice of that, but you didn't just go around all these different stations or whatever. Because even my daughter, she went to music camp up there a couple of times, and by the time she got there, it was totally different from what I had experienced in terms of dining. But the food was good. And my freshman year, I gained 10 pounds. And so I was like, okay, this food is good. I had good experiences as far as the dining hall, and when it was open, it was a plus.
It was a plus.
Gonna get a decent meal.
Alright, so I'm just going through my list, and we've thoroughly covered a lot of things already. I know you mentioned the freshman mixer. When you came to UNCG, it just became coeducational. Were there other than the freshman mixer, were there other elements or traditions on campus that really still kept it feeling like it was a women's college, traditional women's college, or was it really, you could see a lot of shifting towards being a coeducational institution?
I didn't see a whole lot of shift. I mean, my recollection was it was still mostly, I mean, the thinking, I guess, from the administrative point of view was it's coeducational, and we knew it was. But you weren't seeing a lot of men. Yeah. You were not seeing a lot of men, you know, except, and on the weekends, it kind of died in a sense. You might see more men in terms of guys from other colleges coming over, but it seemed like more the females were leaving to go to wherever they were.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it seemed like
they were going to state, they were going to Chapel Hill, they were going wherever. They, you know, there was Greensboro College and all that. There didn't seem to be, from my perspective, a whole lot of interaction with those men to UNCG. Maybe there was, but
okay. Well, I know I kind of already overstayed my hour.
Okay.
I guess to finish off the interview, you've already mentioned, you know, after UNCG, you did teach and then do school psychology, work with Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. Was there anything else that you would like to share that you did after UNCG that UNCG may have prepared you for? Or?
Well, like I said, definitely it prepared me for teaching. Okay. My courses and everything, it prepared me quite well for that. And, you know, I think the experience of going to a predominantly white institution prepared me for working in Charlotte Met. I mean, because, you know, I had the experience of working with some, you know, everybody and interacting with them. Not only academically, but socially or whatever. So when I came to Charlotte, everything was fine with that. So I have positive memories of UNCG. I think it's a great school. I still think Greensboro is a great city. my youngest brother lives up there, and he and his family, and all. But I think it prepared me well. So I encourage anybody, you know, to go there. You know, I'm always excited when I hear of girls in the church that say, "Oh, she's going to UNCG. She's going to UNCG." I'm like, "All right, yeah, good."
I don't have any more formal questions. Anything else you'd like to add to the interview?
No.
All right. Well, Ms. Covington, thank you so very much. I enjoyed talking with you today.
I enjoyed talking with you also.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to end the recording.